This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
This is all about memories for my daughter and myself today. You know, her dream was to be here, and now she's old enough to be here. We just want to be in the middle of the mosh, thunderstruck going nuts, us going nuts, crowds going nuts. And then she's got that in her head for her dad and her for the rest of her life. That's what today's all about for us. And to be able to stand underneath Angus today, that's why we lined up so early, is to be underneath Angus, thunderstruck going mental. We're here for that.
Are you going tonight? Maybe like me, you've got huge regrets that you didn't get tickets. But are you lining up? Are you heading into the city? Are you painting on your jeans, dusting off your skin-tight black T-shirt? Because Aka Daka is in town. So as a fan, how are you celebrating? And do people get surprised when you say you're an AC/DC fan? I just wonder whether or not they're still stereotyped. Maybe you're a lawyer by day and an AC/DC fan by night. Maybe you're quietly spoken and well-mannered, yet you love to mosh and headbang. Are you celebrating? Are you heading into the city? Are you going to AC/DC tonight? Are you a long-time fan? Is this the first time or maybe the fifth time that you've been? Our number's 1-300-222-774.
Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Are you going to AC/DC tonight? Gosh, they've brought some energy to the city, haven't they? I am so jealous. There's also a bit of an unofficial set list that's been released. I'm wondering how you feel about that. Also coming up this hour, we're going to speak to the new creative director of La Mama. See, we like to keep things balanced here. A little bit of theatre, a little bit of Aka Daka. Craig's in West Footscray. G'day, Craig.
G'day.
You're going tonight?
No, going Sunday.
Ah, who are you going with?
So I had a friend of mine ring and said, Colin, let's go to Aka Daka. And I'm like, oh, maybe they're getting a little bit on, a little bit, you know. And he said, we're taking the kids. And I went, okay, let's do it.
How old are your kids?
I'm taking my 11-year-old whose actual birthday falls on that day. So it's quite exciting.
Wow, 11 and going to Aka Daka. That is hardcore. I love that.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to it. And his sister's a little bit jealous, but she doesn't listen to Aka Daka as much as him, so it sort of was a bit of a payoff.
Is it his first concert, Craig?
Yeah, he saw Kiss at the grand final a couple of years ago, yeah. And he was stoked about that. But yeah,
I've got a feeling this is going to be different.
Same location, but yeah, absolutely a lot different. And I think I won't be alone. I'm sure there'll be a lot of other parents there with their kids. And I like the fact that it's generational. That we can share that with our kids. I think that's cool.
Absolutely. And this is what we've been learning. You know, it's not just old school headbangers. There's going to be family members as well. So I'm presuming you've passed your love of AC/DC on to your kids, Craig.
Yeah, to my wife's horror, but yeah, we got over that.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to embrace it. Have the best time, mate. Good on you. Thank you. Michael is in Oak Park. G'day, Michael.
Hi, Rich. I'm in my 60s.
Yep.
First time I'm going to see AC/DC, and I'm going on Sunday night. So, and I was just saying to your producer, I went to see Paul Kelly at the Corner Hotel last night with just a very small 500 group of people. And then, you know, MCG will be whatever, 80,000 to 60,000. So, yeah.
There's such an energy in the city at the moment with live music, isn't it? And I feel like we really need it at the moment. The city needs this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I've got the T-shirt. I'm ready to go.
How old's the T-shirt, Michael?
No, it's a new T-shirt. It's okay. I've got one just for this.
All right, fair enough. The other one still fits, though, doesn't it?
Of course,
mate. Hey, how do you feel about knowing what's going to be played on Sunday night ahead of schedule? So it's not an official set list, but there is a set list doing the rounds online, and people are either steering clear of it because they want to be surprised, they don't want the magic ruined, or they're sort of preparing themselves so they know. Do you want to know the set list in advance?
Yeah, I do. I'm a bit old school, so I'd love being able to look through it and say, yes, 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 maybe, yes, 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 kind of thing. So, yeah, definitely.
So are you happy with the apparent opening song?
I am. I just reckon it's a great set. Look, I just think it's going to be an amazing experience. My kids are in their 20s saying, oh, Dad, but the reviews. I said, guys, I don't care about the reviews. This is the last time we'll see AC/DC. Tour in Australia. I am not going to miss it.
Mate, you're going to suffer for a couple of days afterwards, Michael.
Hey, it's okay.
Yeah.
I'll take that, Rich.
Take it in. Absolutely. All right, mate. Well, enjoy. Yeah. Absolutely. It's funny because it's very split in terms of whether people want to know the set list or not. So this is not an official set list, but there is a set list that's doing the rounds on the internet of the apparent order, including the encore of what AC/DC is going to play tonight. So do you want to know, like Michael, are you like, yep, I want to know? Or, you know, like this particular text that's from Joe in Footscray, it says, knowing the set list before the concert is like going to a restaurant and knowing what you're going to order. There's no spontaneity. The anticipation is gone. See, I do read a menu before I go to the restaurant, but for a gig, I don't want to know what the opening song is. So station reporter Kate Mead has been down with mega fans who have been lined up waiting early to get the best possible seats for AC/DC this morning. She asked them whether or not they want to know the set list in advance.
You know, I haven't looked at it. I feel like I want to leave it as a surprise. Hear something I haven't heard. I did 4 shows in the U.S., so I'm hoping I hear something really good. I think as long as you stay away from the spoilers, you get to keep the magic feeling of it.
I did notice Jailbreak wasn't on it, so I don't know. Gives you time to prepare.
Oh, I'm very, very happy with the playlist. Got a lot of good stuff in there from old and new. Very, very excited to hear for those about to rock at the end of the night. You can expect the unexpected sometimes. I mean, not everything is always concrete in stone. You can always expect some surprises to come in sometimes. But it gives you some time to prepare. But if you're a fan, you'll appreciate anything they play.
So this is apparently the opening song if you're heading off to AC/DC. It's not official, but this is what fans are saying. Have you had a look? Do you want to know the set list, or does that ruin a little bit of the magic? 1-300-222-774. You can text 0437-774-774. Elle Newstead, Double J music reporter. Elle, would you take a sneaky look, or would you want to be surprised?
G'day, Rochelle. Well, look, are we talking professionally or as a fan? Because
is there a difference, mate?
Yeah. Look, in my line of work, I often do look ahead at the set list because, you know, if I'm filming or reporting, I kind of want to know what's coming up and comparing it to what has been. But I also think as a fan, like, I like no spoilers. It's really hard to beat that feeling of, you know, if you think you do know the set list and then they pull out a song you weren't expecting, it's hard to beat that feeling.
So isn't common practice for set lists to be, I haven't really heard of this. I mean, maybe you might be following a band if they've been doing, an international tour or an Australian-wide tour. You might get to know what songs they play in what order. But is it common now for set lists to be announced prior to the gig?
No, it's really unusual, I would say. Precisely for that fact, I think the band don't really want to communicate what the show is going to be. They want people to feel like they're experiencing it for the first time, and it's very much a fan-driven practice. There's a website that I frequent, that most people frequent, called setlist.fm, and it's a user-generated basically database of set lists, what's happening. Some people will go as far as to update it live as they're at the show.
That's keen.
Yeah, you've got communities like Reddit as well who kind of pick apart, you know, what songs change from night to night. So I think definitely there's a huge community there, but it's very unusual that a band will be like, here's what we're going to play.
Yeah.
The exception being if it's like an anniversary or an album show, and that way, you know, you're kind of setting the expectation that we're going to play this album. We might chuck some greatest hits tacked on the end.
I feel bad now because this text has just come and said, whoa, wasn't expecting a potential spoiler alert regarding Jailbreak and first track. There was no disclaimer. Maybe I've broken some hearts out there, but this is just potentially user-generated. Encores, how much work goes into encores? And because sometimes if you're watching a band that you love and you're like, they haven't played yada, yada, yada yet, you know, whatever the band is, and you're like, okay, it's going to be the encore. And then it doesn't get played, and then sometimes the crowd will just chant until they play it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole other kind of, you know, can of worms, the encore. Like, people have their preferences just about knowing or not knowing what's going to happen. I think there is probably a slight trend of artists now ditching the encore. I wouldn't say these big arena shows, but, you know, at a smaller scale, some artists, I think, they're kind of sick of that pageantry, that really obvious predictable thing of like, oh, we're leaving, oh, we're back, oh, we haven't played.
Yeah.
Oh, surprise, here it is. So, yeah, I think that divides people as well. But, you know, it's a tradition that's very easy to get involved with, like the idea that, you know, AC/DC hasn't played, you know, TNT or Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap, like a really iconic song. You probably would expect it in the encore at some point. But also it's such a massive catalogue. Like, how are you going to play everything from a 50-year body of work?
Absolutely. And I wonder how much it changes from city to city. If you look at, say, the Melbourne-Sydney rivalry, whether that's true or not. But sometimes you're like, well, I don't want a cookie-cutter set list or show. It's like when you see them use the same little bits of banter in between songs. You're like, come on, man, where's the spontaneity?
Yeah, I that's a real bugbear of mine, repeated banter. I think having the same set list isn't necessarily a bad thing. Two recent examples... Oasis and Metallica both played set lists, the same set lists that they've pretty much been doing around the world for the past 6 months. That might on paper seem predictable and boring, but I actually think within that you then notice the nuances that change. And also you've got an extremely polished, well-rehearsed show. I think with Oasis, you know, their first reunion shows in over a decade, there was really a respect for the audience and the understanding that people have been waiting a long time for this. They don't want to show up to see them brawling on stage or giving a subpar version. It was a really polished, well-thought, curated set list, excellent performances, and you really get that from doing the same show night after night and really polishing it into something that is, yeah, a really powerful spectacle.
It's interesting. We've heard already this morning from dads who are going with their daughters and young daughters who just want to get into the mosh pit, want to be at Angus's feet, and that's a memory they'll have forever. You know, we've heard from a dad who's taking his 11-year-old because it's his birthday. We've had texts from people who say, you know, we're in our 70s and we're going tonight. This is the first time we've seen Aka Daka. You can't stereotype an AC/DC fan, but, you know, as a chick from Maui, I thought once upon a time you could, but it turns out you can't.
No, I think, you know, they're one of those bands, like I mentioned, like Metallica as well, that they kind of transcended that. They're now icons, really, you know. It's some people might disregard it as meat and potatoes, but, like, it's hard to beat a really good steak, you know.
Absolutely. Like,
it's definitely and that generational element, you know, one of the punters before saying that this is going to be the last time to see them. Yeah, you're going to regret it. It might not be the peak version of 70s, you know, Bon Scott's not there anymore, but it's still AC/DC. It's still these songs. It's still their songs that they're going to be playing live, which honestly is probably the best way to experience an AC/DC song.
So if there's any truth to this set list, then here's another spoiler alert. So as we just heard, You've Got It, which is If You Want Blood, is potentially going to be their opening song. Do you think that's a good choice, Al?
Yeah, I mean, I think with AC/DC, it'd be very hard to choose a song that's not a great opener. You've got, you know, there's the joke that they've written the same song for 50 years. They're all good openers.
And what about Encore, apparently? Not saying this is true. Haven't fact-checked this. This is probably from fans. Encore, TNT, and We Salute You.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I mean, for those about to rock, We Salute You is as close as kind of a sentimental...
as a ballad.
Yeah, not even a ballad, but just that kind of declaration, you know, to kind of leave the night on being like, for those about to rock, this is for you. That's a great memory to leave on if it yeah. is going to be their swan song.
Love them or not, it's hard to deny the energy that has been brought to the city at the moment, and you've got to love everything about that. I mean, Sue in Seaford sends this message. She says, as a kid in the 70s and as a teen in the 80s, I was a little bit scared of the Aka Daka fans, but now I found myself tapping away to many of their songs in secret. So I feel like there are lots of people out there that are really enjoying the energy at the moment, Elle.
Yeah, definitely. I think the last few weeks, it's been a real blockbuster time for international tours. And I think a great thing to highlight is Amel and the Sniffers, mm-hmm. who are supporting AC/DC. They've just announced this morning that they're doing a free show at Federation Square this Friday, which is fantastic.
That's going to be huge.
Yeah, it's basically a homecoming gig for them. They've been out on tour playing the world's biggest festivals, playing late-night television, and now they're here. So get down early to see them for AC/DC. But that's awesome that they can rope in a free show as well. And that's part of an ongoing series that's been happening at Fed Square, really promoting Australian artists as well. So I think it's good to have that balance, always to remember that when we do have these massive blockbuster shows, there's also great live music happening all the time. Just in Europe.
I know, and the lead guitarist for Amel and Sniffers spoke with Bob and Charnel this morning. He was such a polite young man. He was so well-spoken, very not rock and roll. I was expecting him to be hungover or possibly still drunk. I'm not sure.
Well, you know what? A lot of rock musicians, a lot of punk musicians, a lot of metal musicians, they're getting it out on stage. So
that's exactly right. And if you're an aging musician, then you've got to be leading a healthy life. Are you going, Elle?
Look, I'm with you. I'm regretting that I didn't pick up tickets at the time. I'm looking to see, you know, if there's a Hail Mary I can capitalize on. But I've also, you know, been very lucky to see some of the big shows I have lately. So, yeah, it'll be great either way to just see the energy around it.
Good on you, mate. Talk soon. Elle Newstead, Double J Music Reporter.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So coffee is a bit of a running theme at La Mama Theatre. Not only is the coffee there free, and has it always been free, and that's something that the new artistic director and chief executive was told to stop, but she didn't. But the entire essence of La Mama is actually kind of based on coffee and community, because the idea of La Mama Theatre was founded on the concept of Coffee House Theatre in New York. It is a theatre that is close to all of our hearts, whether you've performed there or been there. A warm welcome, Caitlin Dallard, as the Chief Executive and Artistic Director of La Mama. What an institution that you work in every day. What a privilege.
It is absolutely the privilege of a lifetime. I'm delighted to be here.
So let's go to, I guess, the more recent times of La Mama. Mm. It shut its doors for a year, and that was due to funding cuts, I guess. And for many people who didn't know what was happening behind closed doors at La Mama, they would have thought, oh, that's it. It's done. What are we going to do? You know, we've had this rebuild. Is it going to reopen? But behind those closed doors, it was a hype of activity, really. I mean, that's the essence of La Mama. It was like artists in residence. There was a chance for people to make and to create work. What was happening while we thought all was quiet?
We were working our butts off. Absolutely never quiet at La Mama. So we programmed 88 different residencies, so artists making new work at our three different spaces. And we got to work straight away and just tried to find new ways to ensure we are sustained into the next decades and have the same potency and relevancy that we've had in the past. So we've worked harder than ever.
Yeah. It must be rare for a theatre space to be able to do that, and it must be a rare privilege for artists to have the opportunity to do that.
Absolutely. It was really a call to say we need to continue and we need to find ways, and we've got these spaces and artist space in Melbourne is so hard to come by, so it would be sacrilege to do anything but to give it to the artists to do what they do. So hundreds of people put their hand up, we programmed, and it's been an absolute delight seeing every second Friday we come in, we see these artists sit there in the raw stage of making, which is vulnerable and bold, and you know, is just a joy to be part of.
How important is a space like La Mama Theatre now, more than ever, when we look at small-scale, artist-run, creative, edgy first-time work. I could imagine that that would be harder than ever, but more important than ever to have a space like that now.
Absolutely, exactly that. It's vital. It's so critical for the future generations, yeah. for culture in this country, for the way artists develop as artists and themselves, and for new work to be made. And obviously the world is really complicated now and getting more and more complicated, and that's why art's having a voice, a freedom of space to say what they need to say, and the support to do so. It's also harder and harder to be a practicing artist these days. So institutions like ours support that, and it's absolutely critical, which is why we paused, because we couldn't afford for our community to step back and disintegrate away into nothing. It was critical that we were bold and big and really doing our job properly for the artists, for the ecosystem, and really for the next generations who need a voice and who need to tell the stories, the Australian stories of the future, and take creative risk. Yeah. We don't get anywhere in the main stages if we don't have that grassroots support. So it's really
fundamental. And you've got to try things out. I had the privilege many, many, many years ago of performing at La Mama, and I can remember because, I mean, you used to have to know where to stand upstairs on which spots, and there was sort of X marks the spots, because if you stood in particular areas, it creaked so loud that you would hear it on the stage. I remember there was a bit of a set change, and I had to literally run around Ligon Street and backed in.
Yep, sounds familiar.
And it was raining, so I exited stage dry, entered back on stage wet.
And made it part of the show, of course.
Yes. But this was the beauty of La Mama. You're listening to Caitlin Dallard, who's the Chief Executive and Artistic Director of La Mama. How healthy is just community theatre, do you think? And I'm talking about in the suburbs, little small spaces, backyard theatre. Is it okay at the moment?
It's financially struggling, absolutely. It's practically struggling, but the heart of it, the soul of it, the people who make it are strong and are committed. And, you know, we go to work in the regions, and there's little communities of people, and that's their place to go, you know, especially in, you know, modern world where not as many people are going to church or to the pub. Actually, these booming communities of creatives are blossoming in their souls, but financially it is really hard.
Financially
at the moment.
Are crying.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Desperate. Yeah.
So then let's go back to the beginning, where it was founded on Coffee House Theatre in New York. What does that mean?
It's about hospitality, and it's about an invitation for connection beyond the story that we see on stage. So because La Mama is so intimate, you really have an exchange with the artist that is raw and undeniably human, and it's about extending that and offering a conversation that follows and a space to be. And the free coffee is really fundamental to that, because it's the invitation to stay
and chat.
And then the work can bring up really complicated, really hard things that we're not comfortable talking about. That's the point of art. That's the point of it pushing the edge, theatre that pushes boundaries. And then people don't necessarily need to go away and deal with that on their own. There's a space to talk, have really confronting, hard conversations that's held in this space that's the friendly courtyard of La Mama, and the friendly staff, and the free coffee is a symbol more than it is about the free caffeine, really.
Yeah, but look, given the price of coffee, that's
totally. I mean, also artists need a bit of a kickstart.
There's a reason why so many artists go to openings, right?
And sometimes it's free wine.
That's free wine and free food. Let's talk about your career a little bit. You've ended up now as Artistic Director and CEO of La Mama. However, you've got an extensive career you mentioned touring before.
Yeah.
You've also worked with DVA Theatre, which is the theatre company for people who identify as having a disability.
Yeah.
What an incredible grassroots, real person-led career you've had.
Yeah, that's right. So really I began making theatre in diverse communities and devising, directing, getting things up, working, telling stories that needed a platform to be told with often very disenfranchised individuals or communities. So that's really my passion. That's what theatre can be for me. And I actually did a show at La Mama, and then I've spent
Never
a
left.
Lot. I haven't left in a long time. So my role has evolved and evolved But I have never lost that love that is about facilitating other people to tell a story in a creative way. So that's really at the heart of me and my practice, and it's really at the heart of La Mama as well.
This message, it says, support independent theatre like La Mama, lest we lose more venues like the Butterfly Club. How hard would it be now to even open a theatre space, do you think?
Oh, look, not easy. I mean, the small to medium independent sector is really struggling, mm-hmm. and starting afresh really is, you'd need to have a really solid business plan and some significant financial backing. So we do need new theatre spaces. There's not enough opportunities for the artists that are hungry, but actually running an organisation in this climate is really difficult. Which is why we close and trying to find different ways to resource what we're doing and to make it viable. Mm.
I know just recently you've written and you've spoken about, for artists, the concept of dealing with rejection, just where to go to start, how to develop scripts, even things like writing grant applications, and that idea of just supporting artists so that they don't give up, because unless you've tried, it is just... it's just a bloody hard slog, and you keep going because you love it, but then at some point love doesn't pay the bills.
Totally.
So how do you ensure that artists don't give up?
So we've created a new model, which is a pathways in, through, and then beyond La Mama, and that's about creating space and resources to have those honest conversations with artists and to meet them where they're at and to support them on that journey. It's really important that we represent a beacon of hope and possibility for artists, and that we, and that it's not just lip service, that we do actually meet with artists and help them navigate what, which is a, an industry full of rejection and full of heartache, but to maintain strong and really talk to people and to help them where they are at and to let them find ways in. So we've got a whole suite of programs which is about that gap, which is bringing artists in and helping them.
So they don't feel alone.
And that's the big thing, loneliness and lack of community, where one of the things we're doing in our reopen is opening every day from 11, and that's about being a community and being a place people can go, which it sounds really straightforward, but actually... it builds great motivation and confidence just to have somewhere that's not your bedroom by yourself with 40 rejection emails. Mm-hmm. And we need
to throw
an
idea around. Or just to get some fresh air.
Totally. And just to have someone look at you and say, your work matters, your voice matters, there is a future for you. That's so critical and such a simple thing for us to do.
Now, I know that you guys at La Mama are also celebrating the story of the theatre with a print series. So how is this working?
That's right. So we've just launched just this week four prints from the 60s and 70s from some really iconic pieces that we're selling to fundraise, really. So it's beautiful prints with archival quality paper. It's all on our website. It's all out. And it's really about leveraging the legacy of these beautiful artists and generous, wonderful artists and stories with these really cool posters that actually speak to Melbourne at a particular time in Melbourne's history, theatre history, while making some money.
Yeah, win-win.
it's a win-win, really. So
some of those posters are so beautiful. And if you look at, many people love a vintage poster. There's a huge market, and quite often they're from overseas or they're French, but to be able to have one local so people can go to La Mama's website. Narita's called through from Eltham. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to share a memory about Mama. It's a bit more involved than that. At the time of the Black Saturday bushfires, there was a group of us that were doing a play that was written by the very well-known Reg Evans, who was killed during the fires. And in fact, it was the morning before the play was due to start, we found out that he'd been killed.
Gosh.
And we put the play on hold for about a year. Then through community pressure, we put it on. And in fact, the ABC came and recorded it. And then we were contacted by La Mamas, who very generously and graciously offered to mentor us as a group. And they came out and ran workshops and helped us during that time. Now, it was fantastic and really appreciated.
And this is, Caitlin, what you were talking about. It's, you're not doing this alone. You know, that the support is there.
Absolutely. The support of the community is palpable. At the launch last week, it was full of people who have been on the scene for decades and people who are just blossoming and starting, eyes wide open. And everyone's there with the same purpose. Everyone believes in what we do and everyone wants us to survive because so many people have lived the experience of how it can benefit and how that story can resonate in a community at that particular time is just so powerful.
And Narita, what was your role?
I was in true Reg style. I'm a singer.
Yeah.
He asked me to come in as a singer, and the next thing I was doing one of the main characters. He absolutely just sidewashed me.
I love that. And what was it like performing at La Mama?
We didn't perform at La Mama. We did it at St Andrews.
Oh, okay. So you just had the guidance from those guys. Okay. Apologies. I misunderstood.
Yeah, they came after we did the play and worked with us.
Oh, I see.
Really come together as a group and an ongoing concern.
Narita, thank you, because it really highlights that it is more just than the opening night and the performance that you see. It's the individuals behind those performances. I said at the beginning, Caitlin, what a privilege it is for you to be at the helm of this institution. It must be a little bit pinch yourself some days.
It's an absolute honour, really. It's a very consuming honour. It takes a lot out of me, but I love it
so
deeply.
Coffee, right?
Oh, it just means the world to me. I love it. I believe in it with all my heart.
Thank you so much for your time this
Thanks
morning.
For
we appreciate
me.
It. So you can jump onto La Mama's website if you want to have a look at those posters. Not only do you get something cool to hang on your wall, the money's the proceeds go towards keeping La Mama open. That's Caitlin Dallard, who's the Chief Executive and Artistic Director of La Mama.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
A little later, we'll speak to a former producer, record producer for AC/DC. Of course, AC/DC and the spirit of Akadaka pretty much engulfing our city. But also this morning, across the board from every program, no doubt around your coffee tables at work or on your drive-in to school or wherever it may be this morning, you would have been hearing about the changes to children as young as 14 who commit serious crimes will now be sentenced as adults under Victorian Government's plan to try and combat youth crime. This morning on our breakfast program, there were a couple of callers that were happy about these changes and said that for the first time, they felt like it wasn't about the impact of incarceration on the perpetrator, that the focus was on to the victim.
No one's mentioned the victims in all these crimes. You've got people that will be scared to go outside. They have trauma for the rest of their lives, and we're worried about an individual rather than what's safe for the community. And hard times need hard decisions. I think you'll find the courts will be very balanced in their decisions.
Regarding the proposed law, I'm saying it's about time. And at long last, the focus is on the victim.
So do you agree? Do you disagree? 1-300-222-774. Dr. Xanthi Mallett is the Associate Professor at the Queensland Centre for Domestic and Family Violence at Central Queensland University. And Xanthi, you're also a criminologist. Is this a change, a potential change to our law that puts a focus on the victim and the impacts on the victim as opposed to worrying about the impacts of incarceration on a perpetrator?
Good morning. Well, I would say in the short term, yes. I mean, and we do need to look at community safety, etc. But in the long term, no, we cannot simply police our way out of this, sentence our way out of this. And when we're looking at programs that divert young people away from crime or intervention supporting those at risk of getting involved in crime, what those programs actually do is prevent the crimes from happening. Therefore, they protect the community. Simply locking young people up doesn't work. All the research shows us that. So this is not going to be a silver bullet.
There's been, I guess, such emotional and conflicting conversations, not just this morning, but to be honest, for months, and not just here on this radio station, but in households, in workplaces. Something needed to change. Was this at least something? Because as all of the professionals have said today, they don't expect the full sentence, the life sentence, to ever be handed down to a young person, to say a 14-year-old. But is this the circuit breaker?
I don't think so, because I don't think those young people are going to be looking at the potential consequences. People as young as 14, 15, their brains aren't formed. They can't look to the forward in that way, look to the future. So I think this is, it's heavily political. It will, the community will be happy to see this. They will think that they are being protected, you know, like the machete amnesties. But do they actually work in practice? The research says not. We've had similar laws in Queensland. We haven't seen the outcomes of those yet. But we know that putting people in, young people in prison, youth offending, you know, youth circumstances, and then moving to adult prisons later will just further criminalize them. When they eventually do come out, we're going to have those people in the community, and they could have been diverted. The problem could have been stopped. So I really don't think this is the answer. I think it's more political than anything else, and I think it's going to cause more problems. Whilst I understand that we do have a serious, especially knife crime, machete crime problem in Victoria, that does need to be dealt with. The people who are committing the repeat offences and causing serious harm, incarceration may be the only outcome. But for the general offender, it is not. This is not the way to go. All of the research tells us that.
So, Xanthi, in Queensland, when the laws changed, are you saying that that sort of the change hasn't been in long enough to see the consequences of that yet?
Exactly.
How did people react to it, though? Do people say, well, look, at least, because, like, there's a text here, for example, that says, well, the evidence might show that incarceration doesn't lead to good outcomes. Trauma is a life sentence. Justice needs to be seen to be done. And is seen the key word there, that it looks like?
It is.
Yeah.
It is the key word. And I totally understand how people feel like that. But what we know is if we can divert people away from committing these crimes, if we can intervene early enough, we are protecting the community. We are protecting that victim, those victims, because once that crime has happened, you can't undo that. You can't undo that trauma to the victim. But can we stop it happening? That's where the resources need to go. So it's not about helping those, you know, the people perpetrating. That's what it looks like in, you know, what it is. But it's really a bigger picture. Can we prevent these people causing this trauma, helping them, but helping the community?
Let's have a chat to Joe, who's called from Geelong. Morning, Joe.
G'day, how are you?
Really good, mate. What did you want to say?
Yeah, I find this quite interesting about the new laws the state government's either brought in or bringing in. Because if these young kids are going to be sentenced under a adult crime, are they going to be sentenced to an adult jail? And in saying that, because I'm an ex-prison officer myself, all these prison officers are going to have to be retrained how to deal with juveniles.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah. So you're a prison officer in an adult jail. You wouldn't know the difference of how to then communicate and deal with a 14-year-old.
Yeah, and you've got a... It'd be costing millions of dollars to do this because you've got... retrain prison officers for kid checks, then how to deal with kids. It's a completely different circumstance.
Mm. There's a lot of chat to Joe about, well, jail is a place for rehabilitation, that there are programs in there, there are opportunities to rehabilitate, yet you will have many that work in the sector of criminal justice that will say there is no chance for rehabilitation in prison. If anything, it breeds bigger criminals.
It does. And this is where they network prisoners, especially in the juvenile system, they network. So say our mate from Geelong and our mate from Dandenong, they meet there. So that's why you see the crime going on, because they meet up when they get out. But let's go steal a car. Let's go break, do a burg. It's a networking place.
What would you do, Joe? What would the solution to try and reduce youth crime in Victoria? What do we do?
Start again. Got to get to the bottom of the parenting. Where are the parents? What are they doing?
Often they're not there. Often they've got their own issues.
Yeah. Well, this is the other thing. Some of these parents are in jail or on the drugs or on the alcohol.
Yeah, it's generational.
Yeah, that's right. I don't have the answers. I don't have the answers. It's gone too far. I think it's a little bit like the drug saga we got here in Australia, it's okay to say border patrol, whatever they are.
It's gone too far.
It's gone too far.
Joe, thank you. Thanks for your insights. Just finally, Xanthi, I mean, is Joe right? Has it gone too far? Is it too out of control? So all the government's got left to do now is just, I don't know, lock them up because we don't know what else to do.
Well, I'm not quite that pessimistic, but can I deal with Joe's query about whether youth offenders will be in adult prisons? No, they won't. But if they're sentenced to a sentence that takes them into their adult years, so post 18, they would start in a youth incarceration facility and then they would move to an adult facility at an appropriate time. So we're not looking at having to retrain. We're not looking at putting 14, 15, 16-year-olds into adult prisons. That's not the call here. But they will do the adult sentence as a combined youth offending sentence and then adult sentence. So just to clear that. But no, I totally agree with Joe that there are networks and they do become further criminalised and they learn their trade and they become disassociated with the rest of society and it compounds the problem. We know that, you know, any researcher working in this field will tell you that, any advocate will tell you that. But no, I don't think it's gone too far, but I do think we need to put more money into looking at what is going on in the home. Support. A lot of these young people come from situations that are really traumatic. They can't go home. It's like, where are the parents? The parents are sometimes the abusers, not all the time, you know, but that's a lot of these kids are not safe at home and they're hanging around on the street. So we need to look at a whole approach, holistic approach. How do we help these young people before they end up in these gangs, before they end up breaking and enter aggravated assault and break the cycle before it starts? That's the only way we can fix this.
Yeah, the why, that's the big question, but it's just unfortunately it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of resources. Yes. And I feel like Victoria's at the point where they don't have the time or they don't want the time, but the why is certainly the question. Xanthi, good to speak with you as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Xanthi Mallett, Associate Professor at the Queensland Centre for Domestic and Family Violence at the Central Queensland University, is also a criminologist.
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
AC/DC fever has hit Melbourne, and I tell you, it is infectious. That particular song that you're listening to was produced by Mark Opitz, record producer, sound engineer. Mark, AC/DC fever has just engulfed the city at the moment, and I'm being taken away for the ride. I just feel like even those who would sort of thumb their nose at Akadaka are enjoying the energy that they are bringing to Melbourne at the moment. Was it like that to work with them?
It was, firstly, let me correct you on one thing. I didn't produce Powerage. Founder and Young produced it. In fact, that was the last album that they produced for AC/DC and in Australia before they went with Mutt Lange overseas. But the AC/DC is just a world unto itself. It's a family unto itself. It's in a large part of the Albert family, and the Albert family is one of as you know, Ted Albert and the Albert family. They've been around affecting Australia's music, cultural heritage for over 100 years, starting with songbooks, written music, whatever. And Ted Albert was the man who's responsible for AC/DC, really, in the long run. He was the guy that had the vision, one man. And so he developed with that band, well, Bander and Young and the band, because they had three members of the Young family, a siege mentality.
Mm.
And that was all pervasive in the studio. And when we were in the studio, it was unbelievable. You know, it was just us against the world sort of thing is the way it was. And the memories I have of that particular album are just will live with me forever.
Us against the world. I was just so taken there. And that is the energy that you feel from fans. And I remember growing up, AC/DC fans, I think that's where the draw came from. That's where the love and the dedication came from. You know, kids that I grew up with, they felt heard, they felt seen, and it was AC/DC and us against everyone else.
That's true. And you've got to remember that pre-ACDC in Australia, it was all glam, you know, and it was all girl pop music. This brought the males out. This brought out the collective generation. And this brought out the rebelliousness of the collective generation. And so right time, right place, but right people without shadow of a doubt. You know, the strongest, I always say the best right hand I ever worked with, and by right hand I mean guitar playing right hand, is Malcolm Young, without shadow of a doubt.
Wow.
The young family themselves it's amazing. But you know, memories, God, like Angus and me doing guitar solos for Riff Raff, and just me and him, you know, just together in the control room, and he's kicking the back of my, like he's on stage, running around the control room, kicking the back of my chair while I'm trying to get his solo down, all sort of stuff.
You're trying to work, and someone's kicking the back of your chair.
Yeah, but he's just delivering. Yeah. He's delivering. I mean, Angus. Let me, you know, recording, he would never have his guitar off. He just walking around, you know, and going to the toilet. We had a remote, we had the first remotes, in you know, so I could need leads for the amps. He'd take his SG to the toilet and you could hear him playing in there. I'd bring it up through
hit
the speakers.
While he's,
you know, taking a dump, you know. So it was like, never
that's
had it off.
Rock and roll,
you know?
Baby.
never had it off. Didn't drink any alcohol.
Really?
Numerous cups of tea. The session always started with Malcolm Young walking in, you know, and we'd all be sitting there, me, George and Harry and the rest of the band, and Malcolm would walk in and just start throwing cigarettes at everybody. He'd pull out a packet of Benson Hedges, and because that was his way, you know, we were at the crew, so everyone gets a cigarette whether you wanted it or not, you know, and you have a cup of tea and you talk, and then you have a bitch about some TV show you saw last night, and everyone's getting really hyper. And then George Young will say, okay, let's go. And into the studio, everyone's hype, bang, away we go. And we're recording between 8 o'clock at night and 6 in the morning was our recording hours, because they were a night band. So we
of course they were. So, Mark, when you look at, so, you know, there's probably a fan user-generated set list that's doing the rounds at the moment that is apparently going to be AC/DC set list tonight. That's not official. Some people are choosing to look at it, some aren't. But if you use the same comparison to, say, an album order, is there a similarity? I mean, do bands go out there ever and wing it on stage in terms of how they play their set, or do they treat it almost like an album and the story that an album would tell?
It really depends on what it is, and sometimes it's a part of, like, the album, but it's got to suit the concert agenda primarily. And not more importantly, you got, not only you give the people what they want, but you give them what you want to give them. And so a flow is so important in any set list. And for me, AC/DC set list, to me, Riff Raff is duh. That's the perfect opening song, you know, because it rolls up AC/DC in one big ball. Just if you listen to that song from beginning to end, it's a symphony of AC/DC.
So, and what would you open with?
I would open with that, because it's most definitely I'd open with Riff Raff. Yeah. They opened Apollo. If you a track I mixed in a live album back in the day called Blood on the Tracks, and it was primarily Apollo Theatre at Glasgow. And on that tour, they opened with Riff Raff, and boy, it just, wow.
It's going to be such a wild night. Mark, I could speak to you for hours about this, but thank you so much for your insights and painting such glorious pictures. I really appreciate it.
You got to do it. They're brilliant, you know, and yeah, they're a bit, I'm not going because I like the AC/DC that I saw and work with and all that, and that lives with me forever. And
they're,
I don't,
the memories,
you know,
that you want to hold on to.
Yeah, I don't blame them for spreading the word. Keep on spreading the word. You know, like Angus will never stop playing. I just told you about how he wasn't.
That's it. Yeah,
everywhere.
That's it. He's taken his guitar to the loo. And he's never going to stop. Mark, good to speak with you. Thank you. Mark Opitz, record producer and sound engineer for AC/DC, amongst many other bands. But as you probably know, this year the ABC Gives Appeal, we're teaming up with Oz Harvest. If you haven't heard the incredible work that they do, they basically provide really essential food relief for people who are in need. Tomorrow you're going to have to tune in, because we have got so much to let you you know about how you can give. But I quickly want to have a chat with Shelley Dewison Bogue, who's from a fresh food program coordinator at Mornington Community Support Centre. Shelley, I feel like I've just completely butchered your name and where you work, so apologies. So you coordinate the support at the Mornington Community Centre. What role does OzHarvest play there?
Well, for us, OzHarvest do a massive delivery every Friday at the support centre, and then we are lucky enough to then pack up the food bags and we feed about 50 or 60 families with the food that OzHarvest deliver on the Friday. So it's absolutely essential.
And without them, what would you guys do? I mean, what would happen to people?
I mean, the OzHarvest program allows people to have a secure meal and know that something is going to be coming to them. You know, it avoids them having to stress about buying groceries or paying a bill. So knowing that every week they get something, you know, and what OzHarvest deliver is phenomenal, from meats to fish to yogurts to pantry staples, to fruit and vegetables. Like, you know, it's a bit of a lucky dip. You never know what you're going to get. And, you know, along with that can be milk and bread.
Yeah.
So literally, you know, fills the kitchen.
You must have seen lives change, you know, opportunities for people, whether it be Christmas or be able to fill lunchboxes for people. You must witness those individual situations change.
Yeah, and that's what's so good about, you know, working and volunteering for the support centre is you can see what a difference it makes to people. You literally see people transform from coming to you really, you know, with a heavy heart and, you know, overwhelmed with everything that's going on in their life. It just reduces just one simple thing in their life, which allows them, you know, a bit more capacity to focus on something else. And being part of the support centre and working with OzHarvest, we don't just give them food. You know, we also have a community cafe, which is all about connections. So a lot of the food that OzHarvest deliver, one of our volunteer chefs will, you know, cook up some meals that we can then give away in our cafe.
And so you feel like you're a part of that community. Shelley, thank you for your work that you do there. It's so important to your community. That's Shelley Dewison Bogue, who's a part of the Fresh Food Program. And as well as that, she's the community coordinator at the Mornington Community Support Centre. Don't forget, you can jump on at any time and donate to abc.net.au/VicGears, or you can call OzHarvest as well. Every dollar donated is two meals that is created for Victorians. And tomorrow we're having a really special day where we're going to reveal some fun stuff that you can do in order to donate to OzHarvest this year, who is our ABC Gives Appeal sponsor. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.